I was the first person to jump off the stratosphere.
What the fuck does that mean?
Do you know the stratosphere in Vegas?
I thought you meant the actual one on the Earth.
No.
You jumped off the stratosphere.
100%.
After years of fine print contracts and getting ripped off by overpriced wireless providers, if we've learned anything, it's that there's always a catch. So when I heard that for a limited time, all Mint Mobile wireless plans are $15 a month when you purchase a three-month plan, I thought, what's the catch? But after talking to them, it all made sense. There isn't one. Mint Mobile's secret sauce is that they sell wireless service online. They cut out the cost of retail stores and pass those sweet savings directly to you. Say bye-bye to your overpriced wireless plans, jaw-dropping monthly bills, and unexpected overages. Mint Mobile is here to rescue you with premium wireless plans starting at $15 a month. Just ask our very own Josh Zola, whose entire wireless production facility plan lifestyle has been completely revamped and overwhelmed by Mint Mobile savings. To get this new customer offer and your new three-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/bears. That's mintmobile.com/bears. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/bears. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first three-month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plans. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details. New two bears, one cave. Tom's getting his vasectomy reversed. I'm sitting with Louis C.K., who has a special streaming January 28th from Madison Square Garden in the round at louisck.com. It is so good to sit with a comedian that I don't have to carry his weight all day. Like, I have been fucking carrying this guy for so long, Louis. You have no idea. The conversations are, it's like when you used to do an O&A. Do you remember doing O&A?
Sure, yeah.
And no one talked?
No, it was got weird sometimes, but it was,
right?
Yeah, it was all right though.
I used to, man, the hardest I've ever laughed. You are responsible for my hardest laughters ever. Literally pulling a car over, as they say, like literally driving to tennis. I used to drive to tennis right at the peak of O&A.
Drive to what?
Tennis. I used to play tennis every day with an old man that had.
You played tennis like professionally?
No. I played with, I used to play with this old man. I wish I could remember his name. I think he was had the beginning stages of Alzheimer's, so he was horrible at keeping score.
Beginning stages of Alzheimer's. You used to play tennis with an old man.
Yeah.
And you don't remember his name. It's very poetic, you know.
He was an editor. He was an editor. You guys may need to edit his name out. He told me some very wise things. I joined this country club. And it was down by Fox, and I lived over in Wilshire, La Brea. Okay. So every morning I played one time, and they go, "We'll pair you with someone at your level."
Right.
So I was like, "Cool." So I show up, it's a 70-year-old dude, and I'm like, "Motherfucker!"
But then he's probably real good, right? These guys that play their whole lives, they're really good.
Well, he was as good as I was when I first started playing tennis again, and then as I got better, I had to slow my serve down. I had to because I wanted to play. I wanted to burn calories.
Yeah. I love playing tennis.
Do you really?
So fun.
I really enjoy tennis.
Yeah, it's great.
I played. Do you ever see me play Tom?
No.
I destroyed him.
Well, I bet.
I destroyed him.
I'm not surprised.
I aced him, I think, around 27 times. Mm-hmm. And Tom's not very athletic.
No, I guess he's not, huh?
No, he's like, do you ever remember in high school the guys that were like, "Oh, yeah. You think that's a sport? Put on some pads. I'll show you a sport." And you're like, throwing your body against another man is just not the definition of sport.
No, tennis is a sport.
Tennis is a sport.
It's just very satisfying because you get to hit every 10 seconds. You get to keep going.
Yeah.
Every game is like baseball is so frustrating because you only once every hour get to hit the ball.
Did you play organized sports as a kid?
Just as a kid, like Little League baseball and football. I played Pop Warner. Football.
Yeah. Back when. But how many concussions do you think you've had?
I don't. Who knows? I hit hard. I was big, so I was a lineman.
Really?
Yeah.
I was, I played seventh grade. They put me in as middle linebacker. Mm-hmm. And I was not, it was a private school. I was not good. I don't like confrontation. I don't like hitting people.
No.
First play, I intercepted a pass and ran it back to the 1 yard line.
Whoa.
And now all of a sudden I was the golden child. They're like, yeah. Kid's a natural.
Right.
And I played for 2 more years just getting concussed.
You just never did that again?
Never did it again. Never did it again. I remember in practice one time, it was back when you could hit kids.
Yeah. You can't hit kids anymore?
No.
You mean when kids could hit each other, you mean?
Kids could hit each other. No, I got back when coaches could hit
you. Oh, when coaches could hit kids. I see. When you, but you put yourself in it, you said when you could hit kids.
Yeah. When I heard the offense in practice say the play they're going to do, they're going to run a screen. And I was like, oh, easy peasy. I'm going to pick this. Pick six right
practice.
Now.
It was practice.
Yeah. And I fucking intercepted and ran it back in the coach as I was doing my Enzo dance in practice.
Yeah.
Came up to me and just fucking right on the side of the helmet. Whap! And like my hair. Wow. And he was like, you knew the fucking play was coming.
Wow.
And yeah, it was.
My coach kicked me in the ass once.
Really?
Really hard. Yeah. Because I was me and these other kids who weren't playing. We never played because we sucked.
Yeah.
We were just taking our helmets and smushing them in the mud and just fucking. And he just ran up and I just felt this foot hit my ass like really hard. And I had pads, but he was a big man.
Yeah.
And I was 10. So
you were 10.
Yeah.
We were that. I'm a little bit younger than you, but not much.
I'm 55.
I'm 50.
Yeah.
So five years. You seem so much older to me when I started.
It's almost another generation.
It is.
Pretty much. That's older. So So when did you play tennis?
As an adult?
No, with this old guy.
When you guys were doing O&A. When O&A was at its peak.
So you belong to a country club. Were you a rich guy growing up?
Kind of. It's a weird thing to say these days because people read into it differently. My dad was a lawyer, and he was kind of like as successful as one could be as a lawyer. We lived in a pretty white trash neighborhood, but we could pay the bills.
Yeah.
And then L. Ron Hubbard hired my dad.
Really?
Yeah. And
wow.
My dad beat the Church of Scientology in court, and L. Ron Hubbard said, "Anyone who can beat us is good enough for me. Put him on retainer."
Yeah.
So my dad worked for the church for, we just called it the church.
The church.
Sure. That's what we called it.
Yeah.
Growing up.
If they're paying the bills, they're the church.
They are the church.
Yes.
So we bought a nice house in a new neighborhood, and then L. Ron stiffed us.
Didn't pay you?
Didn't pay us. And so we had a big house with no furniture. And so my dad struggled to get keep everything afloat because it was like $135,000 for a house in 82, probably.
That's how he got him back. You get a guy a retainer, he can't come after you anymore, and then you never pay him.
Never paid him.
It's fucking smart.
Yeah, and so little did he know I'd have Leah Remini on my show and trash the church.
Yeah, but he's dead. He doesn't care.
Yeah, Well, he's up in a spaceship somewhere.
Is that right? Is that what he thinks?
I'd do it. I believe in it. I'm looking for something.
You are?
Yeah.
Well, how do you mean that?
I would love to find Christ.
Yeah.
I would love that.
Yeah.
Make it a spaceship. I'll take it too.
Yeah. But are you looking?
Yeah. Like not.
You'd like to find something. You'd like it. Yeah.
I'd like it to land on me. Like I'm waiting for it with sobriety.
You're just waiting for sobriety.
I'm waiting for it. I'm waiting for that moment of clarity that everyone says happens.
It's going to happen. Yeah.
Yeah. Would you pay if they could do a procedure
where they make me religious?
Yeah. And then you believed. You believed. Like your father transitioned, right, into Orthodox?
Well, yeah, my father my father was raised Catholic, but his father was Jewish.
Yeah.
And so then he converted to become Jewish because your mom has to be Jewish.
Okay.
Or you're not. So if your father's Jewish and you want to and your mom's not and you want to be Jewish, you have to convert. And he married a Jewish woman much younger than him after my mom.
Like how young?
And so he was like, so he converted, got his dick snipped.
Oh.
Anything to fucking stick it in her. She was sexy. But anyway, I don't know. I don't know that much about it. I was a kid.
Yeah.
But he converted. And if you convert, you go be Orthodox. You're not going to convert to Judaism and then be like, I keep the holidays, but otherwise I don't really give a shit. Yeah, no. But would I get an operation to make me believe? No, I wouldn't.
For real?
Yeah, I don't know. I have no problem not having a faith.
So what do you think happens when you die?
Nothing. I mean, nothing. You'd return to oblivion.
I just had a little bit of a panic attack.
Yeah, it's an upsetting thought because you can't, but it's incredible. I mean that it's a version of what you think heaven is.
I'm having panic attacks right now. You telling me this, like idea that it's just nothing. Like I listen to a lot of history podcasts, and I get panic attacks when I think that when it was Rhodesia, I was nothing. Mm. Like back when Zimbabwe was Rhodesia, I just didn't exist.
No, you didn't exist at all,
and it gives me panic.
Yeah, but everything that makes you was here already. You know. You were in the works in a sense, you know, your parents existed or their parents existed.
Yeah.
And all of the molecules and everything in the world and the swirl of matter and consciousness was already here. You just joined it. And that, and then you're going to fall out of it again, but you're still, and then you're what you parts, all of you is going to, you got kids
too.
So, you know, you just, it's a trip. You get a shot at it. You get to borrow it.
So you're
part of something that's always been here. You're part of the first living thing led to you, you know, and me and, what's her name? Marjorie Taylor Greene. We all came from the same thing. To me, it's just way so much bigger than me that I don't really think of it in terms of like when, does my life end? It's just like, I'm just sort of like I'm in a crowd shot. You know what I mean?
No.
Like in a movie, like a big crowd shot.
I got a tight, Louis.
What?
I got a tight. It's my single.
Oh, you're in a tight, you're in a one?
Oh, it's a crowd shot, but they got a single on me. Like, zoop. Yeah. Like fucking.
Yeah, I was watching a movie called something Jack. Time Jack. Time. It's with Emilio Estevez and Mick Jagger's in it.
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
Free Jack.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So there's a shot in Free Jack where Emilio Estevez has a car accident. He's in a race. He's racing. Mm-hmm. And his girlfriend or his wife is in the stands. And he has an accident. He dies in front of everybody. And it's called a snap zoom. Snap zoom into her face. Like, in other words, they take the zoom off of the electronic and they just, so it goes into her face and she screams. But if you look at if you freeze it like one frame before it snaps, you see she's kind of just standing there. And I think Emilio Estevez is in the shot. Like it's a crowd shot.
Yeah.
So everyone's just kind of hanging around. And then she goes, ah, and they snap zoom. So like the one frame before you see everyone's relaxed. And I think there's people in that's the movie. I think Emilio Estevez is actually in the shot. But anyway, so that's what you're saying. You're in a crowd, but you want... You're seeing it from.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have a hard time. Don't you feel a little bit like, I don't know. Don't you feel like you're special?
I was a kid. I did.
Yeah. I still feel that way.
Well, when I was, you still feel like that. Yeah. I see that. I see that. And it's a double-edged sword because I think you feel special. You glow as a person. You glow because you're special, but you're also terrified.
I'm terrified.
Yeah. That's what comes with being special. If you could get a little more into the mud and just feel more like a nothing.
I couldn't do that.
It's not so scary.
I think about a lot. I listen to a ton of history podcasts.
Yeah.
And so that's what I sleep to. And so I had a dream. They were talking about the Great War, the World War I. Mm. And they were explaining the trench technology and how they'd be like, all right, everyone go.
Right, with a whistle.
I wouldn't do it.
I think about that a lot. When I like Gallipoli, ever seen that movie? Gallipoli is a great World War I movie. And it's just about that because they were in the wrong spot. It's about the Australian troops and the English troops were like, let them do it. And they made them charge, but there was just this machine gun just waiting. There was no chance.
No chance.
But they kept going.
And you couldn't.
Over the top. Yeah,
and you couldn't just say, but I don't want to die.
No, you get shot later.
That, I mean, it's.
It buys you, saying no buys you about a week because you get put on trial and you get shot with a post. But you got a bunch of, I mean, I wouldn't go because you get a bunch of chances to escape. You get a chance to talk, to explain yourself.
Oh, I
was, and it may not work out, but this is definitely not going to work out.
That definitely doesn't work out, but might as well roll your dice. I was watching a movie called Racing with the Moon. Mm. It was with Sean Penn, Nicolas Cage,
I remember that. Yeah.
And Dana Carvey. It was because Dana Carvey was coming on the show.
Yeah.
And I remember watching it as a kid, and I watched a little clips online.
It's like the really diligent research. You had Dana Carvey on, so you watched Racing with the Moon.
It's not that diligent. I was obsessed with Racing with the Moon with Sean Penn's haircut as a kid.
Oh, yeah.
And so when I saw that he was in Racing with the Moon, I went, fucking Racing with the Moon. I love that.
Yeah.
I didn't realize the storyline in it. I didn't, as a kid, I had no concept of what the draft really was.
Yeah.
And so it's a story about these two kids get drafted for World War II.
Yeah.
And they're about to go, but they're trying to get memories before they go because they're afraid they're going to die.
Right.
And there's a scene of Sean Penn walking down a railroad tracks. And as an adult, I saw that very differently than as a child. And I went, just keep walking.
Right.
The fuck are you doing?
Yeah. I don't know where that comes from. That kind of like, I guess I got to do it. You know, yes, sir. It's a culture. Or something? I don't fucking know.
Yeah.
Makes a guy fucking do that?
Look at you don't strike me as someone who would listen to a lot of David Goggins or Jocko Willink.
I don't strike you that way.
No.
I don't strike you.
No, because
I don't know who those people are, so no.
Okay.
No. David Goggins.
Oh, dude. No. Military. He's friends with Rogan. Oh. And so he runs 100 miles a day, and he's he's all about. It's very inspirational, but it's not, and I've always tried to say this the right way, it's not slick enough to be, he's not slick enough to try to sell it to you. He just happens to be selling it to you. Does that make sense?
No.
He's not Tony Robbins. Oh. He's not up there let me get inside you, right? Okay. He just is
he's just a magnetic or influential?
It's so coming from the center of his chest. Don't be a fucking pussy. Bitches, stop running. Don't be a bitch. Just run. That's David Goggins.
Okay.
Who's going to carry the boats? Who's going to carry the boats? He just is, he had that switch that we were talking about with religion, but it happened for him about life transformation and discipline.
He's the guy, that's what he looked like before or something like that?
Yeah. And
it feels like it's hard to be that guy.
I think it would be really hard.
Yeah. I mean, you can get, anyone could be that guy. You just choose which thing you're going to fucking torture yourself with. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because you could be that guy, but that's hard to be that guy. And then you're like this all the time.
Oh, it's not.
And then you die. It's not like you do that and then you break through to some infinite perfection. You just do this and then you fucking,
you die.
And then you die. It's really short, life. It's so short. It's so short.
Do you feel like do you sometimes wake up and you go, I'm halfway done?
Yeah, I'm way more. I mean, I'm 55. That's more than half. I'm not going to make 110. Headed to 110.
How old do you think you're going
to
be?
He's not either. That's not 110 years. You don't make 100. You have to be a little Indian guy that eats the string that comes out your asshole. You know those guys?
Yeah.
You have to be that guy. That guy can make 110.
Yeah.
Slow your heart rate down and sit and, you know.
Dude, it has to be.
That sucks too. Who wants to be that? I don't want to be that, you know.
I do.
Do you?
I want to be the last one.
You want to be the last what? Person?
Last person I know.
That really? That's so sad.
I know.
My mom died 4 years ago now. Shit. Seems like recent, you know.
Yeah.
But I thought that's it. I suffered the difficult death, you know. It's my mom. I'm alone now. And now I go through life alone with me and my generation, and we'll just go through life. But now I'm looking at my friends, my dear friends, and I'm like, I'm going to watch that guy die. I'm either going to die sadly young, or I'm going to watch all my fucking friends die. That's horrible. I don't want to find out that you die. I mean, that might happen soon.
Okay, there's no. I'm gonna shock everyone. I think everyone's gonna go, shut the fuck up. I think I'm gonna be at my wife's funeral, and everyone's gonna go, should have been him.
How old is your wife?
Old.
Oh yeah, no, older than you.
52. Oh, she's 52. Okay.
Yeah, good. You're going through life together.
Yeah. Well, she's a couple steps ahead of me, but yeah.
Yeah.
I get to watch her age.
Yes.
And she's going through menopause.
Yeah,
sure. That's a fucking treat.
Yeah, sure. That's rough.
And so I don't know. Okay. I mean, I think this is probably a narcissistic thing to say, mm-hmm. but don't you, when someone dies, like I remember the first person I knew that died, his name was Scott, and we were in college, and he got hit by a car.
And shit.
Yeah. And right on in front of the bar we were all at. And
is he drunk?
Yeah, he was. And we used to cross the street, just run across the street. And he just went to turn, run across the street, and a car hit him.
And that was it?
And I remember thinking, but I'm still here. Like, that's crazy that he's gone and I'm here.
Yeah.
It's fucking weird. It's almost like in a weird way, like a Schadenfreude.
Schadenfreude.
That's it. Where like people die, but then you stay.
Yeah.
And you're like, fuck, so I guess I always live. Right?
Right. Because you have lived.
Yeah. And I keep missing it. Like, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, but it's like,
so I remember every time someone dies, I go, another one, man.
Right. So every time somebody dies, it's really about your survival. It's really just another sign that you're never going to die. That's I don't think that's narcissistic. It's just retarded. I'm pretty sure that's just,
no, he died and I'm here. Mark it down. Special. It's another one.
I knew a guy. There was a comic I worked with in Seattle. I opened for him, I think. And his name, I don't remember his name, but he had a moniker. He was the non-PC comic, the anti-politically correct comic. And it was this is the 90s. This is before any of this stuff.
This is when politically correct people were still saying the N-word.
Yeah, exactly. That was still like, well, you know, they are. But so this guy, his whole thing was about being, so he said, I remember he would say, he was funny and I liked him. He was a really nice guy.
Yeah.
In case he exists still, I don't know, I liked him. But he had this one funny moment where he got a laugh that I don't think he understood why he was getting a laugh. He would say, how many of you people here, you know, they make us wear seatbelts. How many of you grew up in your parents' car, never wore a seatbelt, and none of us are dead? And people would laugh because that's not proof that seatbelts aren't important.
Yeah.
There's the people that died aren't here to raise their hands. You know what I mean? They're not here to. So, yeah, you haven't died yet. But that's because there's no because. It's just you haven't died yet. That's not evidence of anything.
I actually am closer to not believing in death than I am believing in religion.
Wow. I understand that. I understand the idea of like, that's not going to happen to me, but you will get, when you get older that you start, I had a bunch of things. I thought that's not going to happen to me. That's not going to happen to me. And then you go, oh yeah, that all happens. I thought I wouldn't have glasses.
I thought I would never have glasses.
Yeah.
I just found my glasses.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought I would never, like I remember thinking, I remember the first time I found out my blood pressure was high.
Yeah.
And I was like, you got to do it again.
Right. No, you're going to get higher blood pressure. You're going to get, your veins are going to clog up.
Oh,
and your joints are going to start stiffening. This hurts. And this hurts.
Mine hurts too.
Yeah. This is all day. Really?
Yeah. Why?
Don't know.
Are we just going to be those old men?
Yeah. Their thumbs. Nothing
fixed. There's no more muscle here and it just, the thumb sticks out like that?
Yeah, it's just going to be an appendage. I think we have we're like the last of the thumb people.
So
because humans don't need their hands anymore.
Yeah, you're kind of right.
You know, we need these.
So then what's the thing that makes you not worry about death? Like, what do you do to not think about death?
I mean, I don't do anything. I do. It scares me sometimes.
Do you go to the doctor a lot?
No, almost never. I almost never go to the doctor. I call the doctor. I try to get him to, you know, like if I have a sinus infection or something.
Yeah.
I call him. I say, please just give me a script of something. And he says, you got to come in. I got to see you. You know.
Yeah.
But I don't ever go.
I did that for Xanax. I called up my doctor and I was like, I was like, hey, my Xanax is out.
And how often do you take it?
Never really.
I take it to sleep like once every few weeks.
This is a secret time, but I take it when I'm coming off the road partying, like really partying. Mm-hmm. I'll take it my first sober night. My first sober night, I'll take half a Xanax.
Shit.
And then that staves off the bad night's sleep. And then you get the next day, you feel really great.
Yeah.
And then you go, I don't need to drink. I feel fucking awesome. And then you don't drink that night.
And how long do you stay sober for?
I don't know. Chunks. Now, as I'm getting older, big chunks.
Yeah.
Because I for the first time, I'm not rebounding like I used to. I notoriously could wake up hungover and run a marathon. Did it. Yeah. Actually did it. And so, but now I, for the first time, I'm going like, it does feel a little better to get some good sleep.
For a guy who's afraid of death, you're just running towards it, baby. You're just asking for it.
Clip that out and play it at my funeral. I'm going to have a sizzle reel play at my funeral.
Yeah, good, good. I don't want to find out that you died. You have something weirdly masochistic about you, you know?
What's that mean?
Well, I remember the first time I met you, you told me about this show you used to have called Hurt Burt.
Yeah.
And it was really bewildering to me.
I'm bewildering to myself.
Because you were doing stuff that was physically painful, and you didn't like doing it. It hurt.
Yeah, I hated it. And then I did a show called Birth Conqueror where I did extreme activities like jumping off the stratosphere and stuff, and I hated that.
What do you mean jumping off the stratosphere?
I was the first person to jump off the stratosphere.
What the fuck does that mean?
You know the stratosphere in Vegas?
No, I thought you meant the actual one on the Earth.
No.
You jumped off the stratosphere.
Yeah, no. I jumped.
What's the stratosphere?
It's a 111-story building in Vegas.
Oh.
And so we take an elevator to the top, you go off to the ledge, and you jump off it in a controlled descent. And so they got a line that tethers you and you.
Oh, yeah. I was in New Zealand and my assistant did that.
Yeah.
It's weird to watch somebody do that. Yeah.
It's a bizarre.
And then they're right here in front of you.
Yeah. They were like, you're the first person. And then I was like, oh. And but we had to do interviews for TV.
Yeah.
And then they're like, why don't you interview her? It's this Vietnamese lady. It's like just dead inside. Like. No emotion on her face.
Yeah.
And she's dressed in a jumpsuit. And I said, hey, why am I interviewing her? And they go, she's jumped off before. But I go, but I thought I was the first one. Yeah. They're like, no, they had to test it.
So she was the tester?
So I asked her, I said, what do you mean you jumped off this? She goes, $100. My son's in prison. It goes to his commissary. They give me $100 to at lunch. I just jump
so five
times. So you
mean people that test that kind of thing aren't like test pilot no. guys? They're just like fucking desperate people. Let's find somebody who would do anything for $100.
People that worked at the casino, she was like, she'd sweep up and clean out ashtrays.
And they walked to her guy, they said, go find somebody.
Yeah, and so she was like, I'll do it. So at lunch, she just jump, get in the elevator, jump, get in the elevator, horrible. Jump. And so she makes money. Her son was in prison, she told me, and she would put money towards his commissary. And make extra money, $100 every jump.
So he could buy a little bit more heroin from somebody's anus.
Probably.
Fuck.
And I told her, and then I said,
boy, that's really life, isn't it, right there? What she's experiencing, that's life.
She's in the wide shot.
Yes, but for her, that's a really sad tight shot. You put fucking punch in on her. I don't think she's in the wide shot.
I think she's in the wide shot. It breaks my heart she doesn't have a solo.
She has a much more interesting story than either of us.
Oh, I think so.
That is tough. You're like cleaning cigarette butts in Vegas.
Yeah.
And someone's like, you want to jump off of that for $100 to give it to your son who can't even spend it except on.
And then she would just get in the elevator and go up, eat a sandwich going up in the elevator.
Yeah.
Get to the ledge, no emotion, jump. I watched her jump. Just jump. And then when I jumped...
Well, how many times did she need to test it?
They tested it all day long. They were testing it because they were opening the ride. So they start with water.
The other
dummies.
Thing is they chose her because she's okay to lose. In other words, they pick somebody who they're like, who can we have jump that if she dies, it's okay?
I think probably someone who doesn't have a big legal team behind them.
Yeah.
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 They start with water dummies. They were throwing water dummies off, and
she's
they were
right
exploding
after
on the ground. And they're like, tighter, tighter. And then they were like, I think we got it dialed in. Ming, get in the elevator.
They didn't even put a dog between her and the, like a
the
fucking.
Dog.
Oh,
there's the notorious one.
You got to kill a few dogs before you try a person. You got to kill at least one dog before you try a person.
Yeah, I would definitely.
The other option is don't have the fucking stupid thing.
It makes good money for them.
You never think of that when you see those. It's like, well, it's perfectly safe. That's what everybody says, you know. But it's perfectly safe because they tested it. They risked somebody's life for that.
Yeah.
But because it makes money.
It makes money, and it is a memory. You go to Vegas, it's a memory. Here's the thing. I used to think they tested it. it's got to be safe until they did the they did a slide in Kansas City that it decapitated a child.
Oh yeah?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Wow.
They showed the slide.
What did he do wrong? It must have done something wrong, right?
No, he was
did he sit up when he was like, how did he get decapitated?
So this ride was flawed in that they made the ride and they were like, you sit in a slide and like a thing and you'd go down. And the whole point was you go down so fast that as you hit the thing, you'd catch a little air. What they didn't anticipate was how fat Americans were.
Oh yeah.
And so then they were like, well, fuck, we can't just run this ride and just go next. We got to weigh people because we're in Kansas City.
Right.
So we can theoretically, no joke, we could probably put a ton of people in this thing, like legit. Yeah. And if we do, you go fucking flying off this thing.
Yeah.
So they had to measure it. And I guess they just didn't measure it right. They tried, they would put you with a child.
Come off.
They would put so there's a net above it. There's a net because people were flying. It was flying off the fucking ride.
And the net.
I guess, I think. I wasn't there, but that was they would put kids on. So like when I did it, they're like, well, you're 250, put two little girls with them. So it was me and two little girls. And then so
that was the right
you could never do it with your fucking friends.
No.
Because you were like, oh, put me this child with me.
So that kid's head got cut off. You know what that means? That the kid's head came off? It means you're never going to die, Bert. So that's just another sign.
Makes me feel like that.
I'm having a tic-tac. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I noticed this on the tic-tac this morning, by the way, on the box. Look at this. See, there's a little guy.
Yeah.
He's a little tic-tac. And he's a DJ.
On top of a tic-tac with two
tic-tacs. Yeah, see, and I'm fascinated by this because that somebody did this. Like, somebody worked this out. Do you know what I mean? Like, whose job that was. It's like a creative job to make this little tic-tac guy. And they have this much space to advertise. They have a very little space. You know, so it's very small. Like, you would never look at that, right?
I would never notice it.
But somebody saying like, hey, if we put this guy in there, folks might like him and want to buy Tic Tacs. You're not going to see that on the shelf and go like, but if you buy Tic Tacs and you're going to go, I liked that little guy. I want to see him again.
I would never notice it. And
there's a contest. If you scan the code.
Is it a DJ?
There's a contest.
For being a DJ?
It says for a chance to win prizes. Let me see. Here, what happens? And also Tic Tacs has Facebook and Instagram, and they tweet also.
It's not. Oh, here we go.
What is the contest?
Please wait. We're loading. Everyone's allowing cookies these days. You ever notice that?
What do you mean allowing?
Everyone's like, do you accept our cookies? And you're like, I guess so, or I can't find out what this contest is. It's a word search.
Oh, forget it.
Yeah.
I mean, I just remember when Tic Tacs were, do you remember the commercials they had? I mean, you were 5 years younger than me, but it was, speaking of close-ups, it was a close-up of a very beautiful woman.
Yeah.
It's very intimate. She's talking right into your face, and she's just talking about Tic Tacs, and she's putting one in her mouth. And she's talking about them like this. And it made me like buzz as a kid.
Really?
Yeah, I like them still because of that lady. She's
really?
Beautiful. Look at her. Look at her eyes.
Oh, wow.
She was beautiful. And she would, that's the one, really. That's the one. Look at her eyes. She had perfect eyes. And she was right. I just remember her being right into lens.
I've got a confession to make. I've always loved the freshness of Tic Tac.
I mean, she's just so beguiling. Along, I don't remember her walking around like that.
Give up some though. Of that freshness.
She's dressed
calories.
Like a savage.
Now what?
She's got like a macrame top on.
Sugar free mints aren't lower in calories.
Look at
seven.
And then they
have calories per mint.
Yeah.
And a Tic Tac has just Trident, 1.5.
Tic Tac. So I'm staying with Tic Tac.
Because to get fewer
great
calories,
teeth. And those are real
I don't
teeth.
Have to give up yes. taste or freshness.
That's the impressive thing when you see women that are hot were hot Tic-Tac. Back then.
Yeah.
That was all real.
That's right.
Melissa McGovern, fucking hot.
That's right.
For real.
Yep. Had to be real.
Wonder Woman was my thing.
I loved Wonder Woman. And Linda Lavin, is that her name?
No. No.
Why did I think that?
Linda Carter.
Linda Carter. And she was married to a congressman who had a big scandal. Like, he got thrown out of Congress for some reason.
She was.
She was gorgeous, yeah.
Adversely, I went to a dominatrix once for a TV show.
Oh, for a TV show.
And because I was into one, there's these things that you see as a child imprint on you sexually.
Of course they do.
And so that's why I like seeing people get tied up.
Yeah, I had a Wonder Woman fantasy.
I had a heart. My wife one time got a Wonder Woman costume and thought, you know, he's into Wonder Woman. I was like, you're ruining it.
Yeah, I know. You have to be Wonder Woman.
It was her.
Yeah.
You can't be the outfit.
You can't be, you know, Jen.
And then a year later, my daughter dressed as Wonder Woman for Halloween. And awkward. Yeah. Leanne's like, oh, great. Yeah, she was. She was perfection. I wonder what a six looks like in the 70s.
A six in the 70s? I don't know. I mean, I liked the Bionic Woman more. I was into her.
Wait, who is the Bionic? I know the Bionic Man.
The Bionic Woman was a show that came on after. It was a spinoff.
Really?
Jamie Summers was the character name. But if you see, yeah, she was beautiful. That's my kind of gal.
Oh, I do remember her.
Yeah, she was really something.
She had a haircut that looked like she knew how to read.
Yeah, exactly. She was kind of cool. And she was sort of understated. Yeah, she was hot as hell.
Do you remember when Bigfoot met up with the Bionic Man?
No, I don't remember that.
For real?
Yeah, I don't remember. I mean, I loved that show, but I don't remember.
I'm trying to think. I guess 5 years is a lot when you're a kid.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning the stuff that we remember as kids.
Yeah.
Like, I remember Nature Boy and Bigfoot.
But that I don't. Oh, God, look at that guy.
Yeah, Bionic.
Well, I remember I watched it with my mom once, and she ruined it because she explained why it's impossible, this idea of bionic limbs. Because, like, you know, he's got a bionic arm, and he's lifting a car, and she's like, his limb would just tear off his body.
Yeah.
Like, you need leverage. You can't just have, because it's connected to flesh.
Yeah.
And it would just come clean off.
Yeah. Know? Oh, but I remember during this time, there was a garage door, that someone was closing a garage door in our neighborhood, and there was a kid under the garage door.
Yeah.
And I saw it and I stopped the garage door as like a first grader.
Yeah.
And realized it wasn't all that difficult to stop a garage door.
Right.
But I thought, shit, I wonder if I just tapped into something.
Well, that's the Incredible Hulk thing. It's another 70s thing. The Incredible Hulk thing was that he found out that people, when they were angry and upset, they could do miraculous things.
Yeah.
And so he tapped into that and found, but he turned himself green and went overboard.
Those shows are so interesting. I was watching, my father-in-law's here, and he is watching a lot of, what was the show last night that was on that I went? So every premise in sitcoms in the 70s was a simple misunderstanding that turned into a 22-minute story.
Yeah, yeah.
There was never anything that fucking deep.
No, they were just weird premise.
So like, whose cookies are these? And they're like, oh, I don't know.
Yeah.
And it turns out those cookies were made for the big bake sale.
That's right. And he ate one, and now he has to find a way. Now he's got to find a way.
Yeah,
well, yeah, I hate those shows made me anxious. They made me very anxious when I was a kid. Because of that. Because of the, oh no, I hated Lucy. I loved Lucy Carmichael, but I mean Lucille Ball.
Yeah.
But I hated the show because it was like, oh no, now they're going to find out that the thing, and it was this tight, upsetting. And as a kid, it made me, like, I pee my pants when I watched sitcoms.
It was about her wanting to be famous.
Yes, always her wanting to be famous, yes. But she was. It was stupid. It was like, you're famous.
Yeah.
You're on television.
The quicksand, I was obsessed. Speaking of transitioning into, I got into quicksand porn for a second.
Quicksand porn?
Have you ever seen quicksand porn? Well, so quicksand. So during this time with this dominatrix, she explained to me this whole thing of like, oh yeah, you like Wonder Woman, or you might like this video. Show me a video. And I was like, whoa, that fucking hit me. She went, yeah. Well, how old are you?
I'm
50. No, that's what she said to me. And I said, yeah, I'm a good actor, right? Okay, that's not quicksand porn.
No.
Okay, hey, Jen's in here, Paul Halston.
Yeah, this is.
Well, I know, but you don't have to Google it. So, quicksand was a big. So this is like a whole genre that people are into.
Okay, so
they're called sinkers.
And sinkers?
Yeah, the people that are into quicksand porn. And it's basically a woman getting stuck in quicksand.
Yeah.
And this is what turns them on. And what it is...
Turns on the woman?
Turns on the dude. I'm dude watching. I'm assuming it's a dude.
Okay.
And so the best... I mean, I've watched enough of it that I can tell you what the good part is.
Is this actress, like, worried that they... I mean, how under control is this?
You know...
Is that real quicksand?
It looks like it is. I would be concerned.
I mean, her skirt is dead, first of all.
This is the best part of it. Then when she goes, oh, maybe it's these clothes that are...
Yeah, maybe I got to take off my top.
Yeah, maybe I got to take off my top. That's the problem with this quicksand. And then she's just getting herself deeper and deeper. The best part's coming up. It's when their boobs hit the mud. That's the best part.
That's crazy.
Yeah. I said, God damn it.
Maybe I dropped the
goddamn shirt.
No. Oh, she was going to try to use the shirt as a...
Oh, shit. Get rid of this stupid top. Maybe I can...
No, that would really make a difference if I didn't have it.
As a director, are you already bothered by the lighting?
Well, it's sun. Sun is always ugly. Okay. You put something over the... You,
this
you,
is you the best part. You're
doing
talking
a cloudy
over
day, you get a nice diffuse light.
This is
light.
The best part of the quicksand porn. Right here. And I'm sorry, Jen, you had to be in this room for this. But this is the best part
she
of the quicksand
She didn't have to
porn.
Be in the room for this. We could have waited. But what?
Yeah, this is the best part.
Yeah. Just keep going
Some people
deeper.
Argue it's when their head goes under, but this is the this is the best part.
The tits go.
Yeah, yeah, right there. So that I mean, you might as well hit pause.
So there's no dudes in the movie.
No. Sometimes a guy will come rescue them and then fuck them.
Right.
But mostly it's just girls.
Oh my god.
Yeah. I mean, by the way, she's really in quicksand. Like she's like six feet into quicksand.
Oh my god. She kind of fucks it up at the end.
Yeah.
Oh, well, at least they're definitely 18 years old. So yeah. It's not like there's anything wrong with watching that.
So this is a trigger for some dudes. I'll tell you why. Cleopatra.
Tell me why.
There was a movie.
Yeah.
In the 50s called, I want to say, Cleopatra, Queen of the Nile or something. Uh-huh. And they used quicksand as a device, as a plot.
It used to be a point. Big thing in movies, quicksand.
Because of this one movie. This one movie.
Really?
Nefertiti, is that what it was? Nefertiti, Queen of the Nile. Nefertiti, Queen of the Nile used quicksand as a plot device. And it was the biggest blockbuster of the summer. So, and they started, at that point, they were branching out making television shows in LA. And they were like, they're all hacks. And they're like,
Quicksand.
So if you remember, Abbott and Costello always ran into quicksand.
Yes,
they were. Quicksand was in every country. Like he'd be riding his horse and he'd get off and get stuck in quicksand. Everyone got stuck in quicksand. But
did anybody jack off to Abbott and Costello?
Well, no. It was never Abbott and Costello getting quicksand. It was the woman getting caught in quicksand.
Oh, I see.
So then all of a sudden, there's a bunch of probably 62-year-old dudes who their only bit of porn they got to see was a chick getting put in quicksand.
Wow.
Yeah, pretty interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I get it. I get those. Look at her.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's something about somebody being enclosed and it's like I get it. It's like a woman inside of a pussy or something.
You know? Maybe. Yeah, kind of.
Yeah.
I definitely get it. I get it. I've watched a lot of it. I get it. I've gotten into some holes on these where I get it too much.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
But then I saw a dude actually get caught in quicksand. I can't find the clip
in real life.
No. My fucking buddy, John Manns, my cameraman, his brother got caught in real quicksand as a kid and it crushes you. Like you die.
Yeah.
It's not this dude in England, Louis, he was doing a thing for his TV show. And he goes, all right. I'm not good with accents. But he's like, it's going to get me legs stuck in quicksand a little bit. So here we go. All right. Now, luckily, we got experts around here. They can shoot in there, pull me out. Easy peasy, lemon squeezy. Here we go. And he starts going. He goes, and this is getting tight. I'm not going to lie to you. I can't really feel my toes. Is that bad? Should I worry about that? Okay. They're saying this is deep enough. And then the guy proceeds to sink.
Oh no.
And they can't get him the fuck out.
Oh no.
And I'm watching like,
oh no.
It is. And you can see him panicking. And he's like, no, come on. Someone get me out now. Get it. Someone call someone. Him. And it is.
What happens?
I don't know. I don't remember.
You don't remember?
I think they get him out.
Right.
But
he doesn't
die. He
didn't
die on his faces of death.
Yeah. Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was how far back we used to watch things like that, Faces of Death.
Do you get attacked by an alligator?
I don't think I ever saw it.
Really?
Yeah, I remember everybody talking about it. But I had a feeling I shouldn't watch it. as a young fellow.
Was that, your that childhood?
Was, that it would change me in a way I didn't want to feel.
Yeah.
And so I avoided it. I mean, later when YouTube happened, I watched all the beheadings in Syria. I watched every fucking possible horrible. I had a bit about the beheadings.
Really?
From watching the videos about how dumb you look when they hold you, your head, the head up, and you're like, duh, like, you just look stupid, you know? Yeah, man, that's fucked up stuff. I mean, I watched the worst thing I ever saw, the last thing I ever saw like that. It's the one that made me go, stop doing this. Somebody took the footage from Columbine and the security cam footage, and they put sound on it from like cell phones that were on and stuff. And the, and there's like a full fucking, you see the whole thing, and it's really, I that's the last thing I watched like that. And I was like, I can't do this ever again.
I have a, yeah, I don't, I have a hard, I have a real disconnect with stuff like big stuff like that.
Yeah.
Right.
What do you mean? Like what big stuff? Like,
I don't know. I just have a disconnect. Like I have a joke in my new special that's kind of about school shootings. Yeah. And I'm almost like oblivious. It's like, you ever meet those people that swim out in the ocean and they swim miles and miles and then they're, and I go, aren't you worried about sharks? And they're like, I don't think about it. That's how I feel about like comedy and like bad things where I just go, oh yeah, I don't think about it. I don't see it the way they see it.
I don't think about it that way either, because that's the what we're doing.
Yeah.
It's not, it wouldn't make any sense to, it doesn't make sense.
I've seen like people that it makes sense to where they go, ooh, aren't you worried?
And well, it's like going up to somebody who's a diver who jumps off a diving board like for the Olympics. And you go, you're going to get wet in that pool. Like, don't you want to be careful not to jump, to fall off that diving board? Like, it doesn't, you're off, you're fucking jumping. It's what you're doing.
Yeah.
It's what you're doing.
And I regret,
there's no risk, because that's, the whole show is a exercise in fucking around with words and ideas and saying things you're not supposed to say.
The hardest I've ever laughed.
Yeah.
Ever, and I can pinpoint it. Now I've had real long hard laughs, but like where people's words, I heard people's words and they made me laugh, was you and Patrice with the etymology of that's the hardest I can tell you. Where I was, it was, I pulled over, I can tell you my car, I can tell you everything about that moment. And I not only did I laugh, but I looked around an empty car. Like, did anyone else just witness? And it's it's buttoned by Patrice's loud cackle.
His
of a laugh.
Laughing off the mic.
His I loved laugh
him so much. I remember that moment. That's like a moment I remember. There's some things I've done in my life that I can't actually conjure it. But I remember sitting there and watching him. And the thing is that Patrice was such a master. He's one. I think he could have been the best comedian that ever lived. He had just cracked the code on his own stand-up, but he also was tough and he was like impenetrable. Like a few times that I fucked around with joking with him, he would destroy me every time.
Yeah.
And the thing that happened was he was talking about the etymology of the word and how it came from Keikel. It's the Yiddish for circle.
Yeah.
And that in Ellis Island, if you couldn't write, if you were illiterate, you'd sign with an X. But the poverty stricken Jews that were illiterate, they would make a circle, a Keikel.
Yeah.
And that's right. So he was saying this really sincerely. Like he was telling the story.
Saying it sincerely, but with a little bit of a... He looked a little you're Jewish.
But he was looking a little vulnerable when he said
it. Oh, for real?
Like a little like, this is how wire came from. And I was like, wow. It was like if you're in a boxing match with somebody and he drops his right and you're like, are you kidding me? I can just throw this and I'm going to... And I knew I was going to say it. And I said it.
It's the hardest.
And he laughed so hard and it was so satisfying to make Patrice laugh that hard. That is the best. One of my favorite moments of my life was making him laugh that hard. Making other comics laugh is a great feeling, you know?
Like yeah.
I had a moment like that with Letterman. I was on Letterman once and I really surprised him and made him laugh really hard on the air. That was a good feeling because he was talking about, and I didn't know what I was going to say either. That's when, because I wasn't sure what, I just knew I was headed somewhere with Patrice. I was on Letterman on doing panel. And he had his kid, Henry, I think his name is. Yeah. And he's talking about, because I was talking about my kids And he said, see, I can't get my kid to eat anything. You know, we were at breakfast. I go, you want some eggs? And he goes, no, I don't want eggs. You want pancakes? No, I don't want pancakes. Anyone? And I go, well, you're doing it all wrong, Dave. Like, and I really meant it, but I didn't know what I was going to say. I said, you're doing it all wrong. And he goes, really? Tell me. Like any parent goes, tell me. And I go, you make eggs and you go, here's the eggs. That's what's for breakfast. And he goes, what if the kid says, I don't want them? You go, then you ask, what else do you want? What do you want? If you don't want eggs, what else do you want? And I didn't know I was going to do that. But and he fucking, because he was really sincerely excited for a new idea.
Yeah.
And when I just bailed, he laughed so hard. And I felt like this is a great, that was like, that's like a top four moment of my whole, creatively anyway, in my career. You know,
what was the thing, not to get like too interviewee, but like, what was the, why, when did you change in your stand-up? Like, because your stand-up, I remember you made me laugh. When I first started stand up, I was working the door at the Boston Comedy Club. Used to have a bit. I used to work in a diner.
Yeah,
I can talk diner talk. Like, give me an order. Give me an order. Do you remember this bit?
Yeah.
Can you do the bit to Halston? It's really amazing, Halston. You ever been to a diner?
I don't remember it. I'll do it.
I'll do it.
Yeah,
I'll do
I don't
it.
Remember it.
Halston, give me like a diner order. This was Louis's bit.
Two eggs, bacon, hash browns.
Okay, how do you want your eggs cooked?
Scrambled.
Scrambled. Okay. Do you want pancakes for that?
Sure.
So two eggs, scrambled, bacon, hash browns, and pancakes. Okay.
Yes.
All right. I need two monkeys riding sidecar. Yeah, take a pig, fuck it, lay it down, put an apple in its mouth.
Yeah.
I need an Irish guy, throw water all over him, then chop him up in pieces.
Yeah.
And I need two big wheels. Did you want syrup on those?
Yeah.
Two big wheels and come all over their back. I also need scrambled eggs, bacon, hash browns.
That's right. Something like that, yeah.
But you did it.
I was silly back then.
You were silly. Yeah. What if you get to hell and you see a guy and...
Oh, yeah. That was... See, that's when I started changing, though. I think that was... But was silly, too. The thing about
it was still silly.
If you're in hell and some guy comes up and goes, "Yeah, suck my dick," and you start sucking his demon's dick, but then somebody else walks up and goes... You didn't have to suck that guy's dick. Like, he's just, you know, and they go, "Hey man, leave people alone." You know, like the idea that
you need to stand up for yourself.
You assume, yeah, man, come on. It's pathetic. The idea that in hell you have some choices, you know, you didn't realize
it was
blowing a guy.
But like, I remember seeing that. And then I worked with you right when George was born. The weekend George was born, I worked with Dave Attell. And the very next weekend I worked with you. I just had a kid. And
how old is George now then?
18.
Wow. Okay.
She's in college.
Huh.
Yeah. And I worked with you and I was silly party frat. I was Dane Cook Light. I was silly party frat boy.
Yeah. We worked in Florida together.
West Palm Improv.
That's right.
Yeah. With Eric Meyer.
Eric Meyer, who's passed away.
Yeah.
Sad, man.
Yeah. He was, I didn't realize that he was hilarious on stage, but he was 100 times funnier off stage.
I remember that weekend because he was something special. Like, I thought there was something, but he was taking
Xanax.
Yeah, because he had stage fright. It's weird. There's a lot of comedians who are deathly afraid to be on stage. Like, this is a thing. I've known a few.
Really?
Mitch Hedberg was one. That's why he like drank to get, he would tremble. He couldn't, he was like, it was death to him being on stage, but he needed to be a comic.
But if I had
so
his
he
act,
started drinking and then made his way to heroin, which killed him. But Eric would, between every set, he was emceeing and you were in.
We don't
featuring.
Have to talk about him. He's dead. He's never going to hear this.
What's
no,
that?
I'm kidding. No, keep going. Eric was, I remember you really liked him.
And he would pass out between sets. And I go, why do you pass out? And he said, because my doctor told me to take, he went to a doctor who says, just take these drugs. I don't know what finally killed him.
It was alcohol.
Okay.
He was walking down a highway, I'm pretty certain drunk, and a car hit him.
That sucks.
Yeah, yeah.
But another one for you. You're not going to die.
Especially when it's a drinker. That's a double.
That's right.
And so I remember working with you going, telling everyone at the thing, oh, you don't know who Louis C.K. is? He's fucking hilarious. No, you're going to love it. And you had shifted. You had shifted your perspective. And I remember your first joke was, my daughter's an asshole.
That's right. That was the big change, was my kids.
Yeah. And it changed. You said you had a joke where you said, I don't get vacations. But you know that moment when you put your kid in the car seat and you walk behind the car to your driver's seat.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I don't even know the joke, but
that was my little vacation, a little time off.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was,
yeah, I was so tired. I think I didn't live like a real life until I had kids, you know, because I did comedy since I was 17, 18.
Yeah.
And I had real jobs because I couldn't afford, you know, I wasn't supporting myself for a few years, for a lot of years. But I really, having a kid just drains the life out of you, and it really takes you close to that rock, to that fucking craggy rock. Like your face is right there against the rock.
Yeah.
And it's worth it. I love my kids. So, you know, that's living.
Yeah.
You know? But yeah, that's when I started. That's when I, and I also, it wasn't just that. I had also given up on being famous or making it.
For real.
It. Yeah.
And I really, that's when it happened.
I was sure that it was too late and that I was doing stand up for a living. And that I might as well keep doing it. I've been doing it my whole life. But I ain't never going to be famous. I'd seen so many guys that had started after me become famous. And I'd seen kind of who makes it. And I just thought, I'm not, you know, I'm not as good as the guys who are great. And I'm not as pretty as the guys. Like Chris Rock was so great to me back
then. You were working on Chris Rock's screenplay that weekend.
Yeah, yeah. I was working for him. And I just thought I help guys like him. I help guys like him make it. It's never going to be me.
Yeah.
I was sure of that. And so that, I think that loosened up, you know, desire is no good for you. Hope and desire is not good for your, it's creatively, it's not good for your voice, you know. It doesn't give you real ideas to talk about. And it doesn't make you think like other people do, and that's what they want to hear, you know.
Yeah, I gave up. I definitely had given up. And I was When before I started to succeed is when I was like, right when I got fired from Travel Channel, I was like.
You got fired from what?
Travel Channel, from all those jumping off the thing shows. But I remember watching you that weekend, and I was, like I said, I was probably Dane Cook light, meaning like,
You're a big guy with a big voice, and you're an easy laugh. Like you were just like amiable, and you're funny. I liked watching you.
But I remember leaving that weekend and going like, being like, because I just had a kid, and I was like, I remember thinking you made having a kid seem cool, and I was really sad that I'd had a kid.
Yeah.
Because I was like, oh, so I guess my stand-up's over.
Right.
Yeah, I'm going to be a dad comic.
Right.
And you made being a dad cool. And it wasn't until I worked with Ian Bagg, and this is much later when I had, probably 2 years later, when I did my first joke about my kids that was a good joke. I didn't know it was a good joke. Ian Bagg told me it was.
What was it?
My daughter was sticking her finger up her ass and put it in the dog's mouth. Mm-hmm. And they were like, you got to see Baby Isla's trick. And I was like, what is it? And they're like, it's better if we show you. And they did it. And I was like, what the fuck? What are you guys, Nazis? I was like, what the fuck? And they're like, Dad, the dog doesn't know it's shit. I was like, what? And they're like, keeps doing it. Like, you think the dog would get it. And I'm like, okay, I wasn't watching the dog. Do it again. And then they did it again. And then I was like, shit, every fucking time. And they're like, we've been doing it all morning.
Wow.
And then Leanne came down and I was like, you got to see Baby Isla's new trick. She's like, what is it? And I was like, it's better if we show you. But that was like the first transition of like, and it changed. I mean, I would argue as an outsider and definitely as a fan of stand up and you, that transition you made transitioned comedy in a big way.
Well, I don't know. I mean, there's been waves of that, you know, like there's been people that have done that. I've seen, like, I remember Robert Schimmel. Do you know Robert?
Of course.
Schimmel was like a real realist guy. He was living a normal guy life, but talking about it with a really filthy mouth.
Yeah.
And he was one of the best ever. And I got to watch guys like him. I'm definitely there's always been, you know, and I've seen people after me, like new comics who have had kids.
Yeah.
Who have done jokes similar to the ones that I did.
Yeah.
And I just look at that like that's their turn. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Their generation's doing it now. But
I took what you did and I think I doubled down. And I was I like that honesty. And now I'm going to share everything.
Yeah.
And I think that was a mistake.
I never talk about
it was a big mistake.
It is. You got to keep some stuff to yourself.
Everything. I did. We had a fucking meltdown at the fucking airport today.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've shared everything.
Right.
So now people know my kids and they know my wife.
Yeah, that's bad.
It's not the best.
Yeah, no, I don't recommend that so much. I think if I could do it over again, I probably would have named myself something else on my show when I had a show.
Oh, yeah.
And I think I would have played it a little closer to the vest.
Now that I know that I could just tell a story, I would have definitely. But I don't know. There's another part of me that thinks there's certain things I shared that maybe were too much. But like, you know, talked about Isla when she got her period. I talked about her on Conan.
Yeah, that's tough, man. That's I don't talk about my kids anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, they're older now.
How old?
17 and 20.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And so, but anyway, I stopped a few years ago.
So you had just had, so your wife was pregnant when we worked together.
Probably. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, with the second one.
God damn it.
Yeah. Years and years go by, man.
It's insane how.
They go by and I go by and then you die and then your kids die. Yeah. It's hey. Not, you know, it's not being dead. Being dead is nothing. It's the transition is scary to think about.
No, it was scary. Yeah. What's scary is the moment you're in the bed and everyone's the looking bed, at
that's
you.
That's where you see it happening?
And yeah. And everyone's standing around you.
Happened to your friend in the street, though. Did he die when the car
hit
him?
He died there.
Were you there?
Yeah, I think. I was
pretty drunk. Go over and look? Was he like this on the pavement?
No, I walked away. I walked away and I said, he's going to be fine. I was really crazy. I'm really good in stressful moments of absolute denial.
Yeah, you disassociate.
Disassociate. Yeah. I go, he's going to be fine, guys. He's going to be fine. People get hit by cars all the time. All the time. I walked to the fraternity house and they were like, he's dead. And I was like, he's not dead, guys. No one's talked to a doctor.
Yeah, man, this is your
thing. I got into a fist fight that night.
I was with a friend of mine. She used to be my girlfriend, this French woman. She's great. She's like my best friend. But we were together.
Is this a chick you dated?
Yeah, we were together for a couple of years.
Did you live in France when things got weird?
No. I went there. I went there on a trip and I met her. So we had a long distance relationship, though. But I did spend some time
there. French women. I never got to have a French woman.
She's the greatest. She's my favorite person.
Like, did she do stuff like wake up naked and light a cigarette and go, I need a coffee and a glass of wine?
No. But she was very French.
Wait, how did you hang out with a French woman? Because you're pretty like American.
I'm very American.
Like, you're like, yeah. I need a Cinnabon.
Yeah. I'm very American. But no, I like Europe, though. I
love Europe.
Yeah. Do you tour there?
I'm going there tonight.
It's great. Where are you going?
I go to Oslo tonight.
Oh, Oslo's
I leave at 3 o'clock.
Oslo's a great town.
Yeah, you know what we're doing tomorrow? We're getting a boat with a sauna on it.
Yeah, of course you're doing a whole thing.
And we're doing
You don't just go to Oslo. No, you have a whole thing. You have barbecue things and you have a whole thing.
Do you know what I could do?
I just go with the thing.
Do you know what I could do with your talent? Like, if I was as good at stand-up as you, I'd be playing fucking stadiums.
I used to play stadiums.
I know, but I'd be doing it right now. I'm not thinking if I was you. I think if I had your talent.
Right.
God, if I was half the fucking comic you are.
You're very funny, Bert. You're very funny.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Louis.
You are.
So go back to the French chick.
So we were sitting in a restaurant in Paris and she had her back to the window, to the, you know, the street. I was looking at the street behind her, traffic.
Yeah.
And we're talking. And this guy pulls up to park a scooter and then a car comes and just T-bones him. And he goes up and falls, like he twirls in the air and falls. Yeah. And I went, oh shit. And you heard people scream and stuff. Yeah. And I go, she goes, what happened? She doesn't look. I said, this guy just got creamed by a car. And she goes, yeah, but he's okay. Right. And I go, I don't think so. And I'm looking and somebody's like, and the guy's like trembling and stuff. And somebody's carrying him on the sidewalk. And I go, he's hurt really bad. And she goes, he's fine. Everything's okay. Everything's okay. And then she starts going, everything's okay. Everything's okay. Starts singing the song. And I was like, wow, you're insane. You're insane. It was a really weird realization. Like, wow, that's how you coped. But then later, a few years later, I was on about 8 grams of mushrooms and she was there with me and I looked at her and I remembered that moment. And I said, that's so funny that I thought there was something wrong with you in that moment. Of course you were the only sane person in the whole, if on mushrooms, I remembered that moment and realized she was right. Everything was okay. Everything's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. He got hit. So what? He's on a scooter. He got hit. His leg will be, he'll be in physical therapy for a few months.
Yeah.
Or he might die. He might get a blood clot and die. Who fucking cares? Everything's okay. It's all right. Everything works out, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not as afraid of things as I used to be. Like I don't get as anxious about the world. Like if we decide to blow each other up, like to just blow up the world.
Yeah.
That's what we did. There'll be, from, if you go to the real wide shot, like space, and the earth is this big,
yeah,
it'll, you'll just sort of, somebody looking at it will be like, what's going on there? And then everybody dies on it and it doesn't change. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's not that much to worry about.
There's a lot to worry about. I think
you don't
I,
have to worry about it though.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're gonna, you know, look, you're gonna, not only you're gonna die, you're gonna be nothing like you never were anything. But that should make you less concerned. I mean, you just, all you have
so
is,
then why, so then theoretically, why don't I live like a Viking and just go and suck and fuck?
Because that's
and
not kill. That much fun. It's, you feel more and you experience more by living a normal life. A normal average wide shot life. Is you feel more, you get more out of it.
Yeah, but there is an argument for being a nihilist.
Life that's exciting is temporary. Like, it's temporary. It leaves you dry, leaves you, you know what I mean? That's why you're afraid of death.
Yeah.
Because you're playing fucking baseball stadiums and you're flying around in private jets. I've been there. It takes, it doesn't, life doesn't compare well. And it's, those exciting moments are very quick. They don't remember them that much. You're not going to remember them that much.
Yeah.
You know, it's really the, it's like just like sitting with your daughter waiting for to be called to the, you know, whatever, to the thing, whatever. You take your kid to sign up for something. And I'm not just saying the magic of being a parent or something, but it's just a sober, regular, boring life is that's special.
So then give me like one. Like I'd say like a stadium shot, meaning like, you know how like you do an arena and you're like, I'll get one picture, like those stadium shot moments. Cause you're right. I don't like my favorite one ever was in Tallahassee with the spear leading everyone in the war chant, but I don't really remember it.
Right. You don't have it in your head anymore.
I can't access it. I can't feel the thing I felt there.
Right.
But I do have moments in life where I access, like, when Georgia wore that Wonder Woman costume,
yeah,
I mean, I can feel this very. The boots that were portrayed on Amazon,
yeah,
they just covered up sneakers,
yeah,
and her heart was broken. She thought she got real boots. She got,
and
like,
when you saw her disappointment,
heartbroken, I went, hold on, ooh, I can feel it. Like, I go, we can fix this. We can fix. I can access that emotion immediately, but I can't access the big.
No, that's because that's a very beautiful moment for your wife. Who's your wife?
Georgia, my youngest. Wonder Woman costume.
Okay, because see, Halloween, now you fucked me up because you're talking about your wife trying to fuck you in a Wonder Woman outfit.
I cross-pollinated.
Yeah.
But like, I remember that feeling of Georgia not having the right boots.
That's a forever feeling, right? But these stadium feelings are not. Like, I did Madison Square Garden, I don't know, 8 times in my life. And I remember every show, after the show, I would look up, I'd watch the guys clean up and stuff. And I'd look at it and I'd go like, I want to feel something. I couldn't feel anything. It's like, it's just a day at work. I live downtown. I took the subway and I do MSG like it was my job. And I just go home. But I go, is this special? This is supposed to be special.
That's exactly the first time I did the Wilbur.
I didn't feel that way.
I sat in the back and I went, I feel like I should be high-fiving someone.
Yeah, and as soon as you just did your job. But then, and I don't really remember those shows. And then years later, all this shit, my ability to do things like that went away. I lost everything. And then I went to see Bob Seger at Madison Square Garden as a spectator. And I just went with my friend Joe and
List?
Yeah, Joe List. And Joe Mackey, too. I went with two Joes to see Bob Seger, who I grew up high school. Bob Seger was the soundtrack to my
Night
high school.
Moves.
Yes. Main's down on Main Street.
Rambling, Grambling Man. That's one of my best promo videos was Rambling, Grambling Man.
Oh, it's just the greatest. Fucking,
yeah.
So I went to see him. I'd never seen him live. And this was his last show. He announced this as his last show at the Garden. And so I'm sitting there and he comes out and he's singing all the songs. And it's a beautiful show. He has 14 guys on stage. And you don't know why. And you realize there's two bass players, two good and stand next to each other. And he goes, he introduces them. He goes, this is Mike, whatever. He was with me since 1962. And next to him is a young man who's, coming up. He keeps his band together, but they can't play anymore. They're too old. They're all in their 70s.
Yeah.
But he keeps them there. But they each have like a partner guy, like a young guy who's really playing.
Yeah.
But anyway, so I'm watching that show. And I realize, I think that he and I are the only two people in this room who have been on that stage Like, we're the only two people who have headlined this room. And I'm just sitting here in seat number whatever. And I got really sad. And I was just crying. And also, his music is very emotional. Yeah. So I called Blanche, my French gal friend, and I told her how sad I was. And she said, I'm gonna challenge you and tell you you weren't sad. I'm gonna tell you it was joy. Because you were finally able to see the beauty of what you did in that room. You were finally able to, because the garden is, when you're sitting in it, it's so beautiful. It's such a beautiful place.
Yeah.
And she said, you're finally, after all these years, able, because now that you've come down and you're standing on the earth again, you're able to see that it's so awesome that you did that. That it's so incredible that you did that. When you're in it, you can't. There's no drag on your wings. You're in the stratosphere. But when you come back down, you can go, I can't believe I was fucking there. I can't believe I was there. And I'm going back. I'm doing it one more time.
We should talk about that. We should definitely talk about that. Hold on. This French chick sounds fucking awesome.
She's the best. She's the best person I know.
Have you seen the morning show with Jennifer Aniston?
No. No.
Steve Carell in that plays Matt Lauer.
Okay.
And he gets canceled.
Yeah.
And he goes to Italy. Uh-huh. And he meets this Italian chick. It's the same girl that was in, do you remember Hot Shots with Martin?
Sure. Yeah, her. I remember her. Yeah, Isabella, she's really funny. Isabella
something.
Yeah.
She's fucking beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful. To this day, beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And, but there's a European way of looking at cancel culture that seemed very sexy. That I was like, okay, that's where you go.
Well, Europe has got its own thing now. It's got its own cancel-y stuff.
For real?
Oh, sure, yeah. It's all over the world.
Is it? Oh, because they're all going alt-right, right?
Well, I don't know. We have a tendency to, people start, you know, like there's words that are in French, American words that are making their way into the language. Like problematic is, they say it in French. They don't have a French for it.
For real?
Je dolite, je problématique. Yeah. Yeah. Like we're where they're a little behind, but yeah, they got their own shit going on.
Yeah, Juliana Margulies. There's this. This is a really great show, by the way.
I've never seen it.
It's really fucking great.
She's not the one you're talking about, though, right? She's not from Hot Shots. Juliana Margulies.
No. It is Isabella. Scroll down. Where is she? It's gonna be maybe even lower. I forget where she is. That's her. No. Valerie Gallino.
Oh, is that her? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
She was from Hot Shots Part
That's right.
Deux.
Yeah.
That was such a great fucking movie.
Yeah.
Can I ask you? I hope you don't, we can edit this out if you don't want it. But where did you, when you had that year off, did you go anywhere? Did you go to Europe?
Stayed home and was with my kids and stuff.
For real? Just stayed home?
Yeah. I mean, I had to be, you know, my kids were with me half of every week where I was.
Oh, you still had to be a. Oh my God.
Yeah. So it's just
that's so crazy. You're still to be a parent.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I thought you got to tap out and go get fucking drunk and do drugs in South Africa for a year.
No, I'd be a dad. And,
oh, fuck.
Live life. And I have a dog. And,
oh, you still have a dog?
Sure. You don't throw your dog in the garbage.
No, I just think there's a point where you set the dog on the couch. You're like, look, things have gone sideways.
No, but it has. That's otherwise I wouldn't have made it, I don't think.
For real?
Sure. Yeah. No, I needed life, my normal life.
Yeah. Really? How long did it take? How long did it take for you to bounce back?
A couple of years from now.
So, Madison Square Garden.
Yeah, so I'm going back there.
So wait, what gives you? Where's your brain? Your brain has never been on page with Hollywood. Like your brain has always been a little outside. Mm-hmm. You were the first one to release on your special on your website.
That's right.
Horace and Grant or Horace and Pete.
Horace and Pete. Yeah.
Horace Grant's a basketball player.
Yeah, he's good.
Horace and Pete. I mean, you helped launch so many people that were struggling, like some shows, and then I don't want to say Tig's name because I know she kind of threw you under the bus, but right. One Mississippi you helped launch.
Yeah.
Zach Galifianakis' baskets.
That's right.
You brought back Louis Anderson. I mean, so many big things where it's almost like, and then just even like the side thing, like I remember being like, someone was like, did you see the latest episode of Louis? I was like, why? And they're like, his wife's black. And I go, wait, how can that happen?
Yeah, Susan Kolesky Watson.
And they're like, great. They go, Louis said she was the best actress. For the job.
Yeah, I didn't want a black wife, I just wanted, we're looking at the, we're having people come in and they all look the same and they all kind of sound the same. And I thought, can we open it up racially? Let's just get some black, just so with different voices, different colors, different attitudes. An ex-wife, by the way.
Yeah.
And so I thought a black ex-wife, that's interesting. So we had some black women come in, and then she just was, as soon as I saw her, it just, the concerns about what race she is or whatever just melted away.
It was bizarre.
I just thought she was so good.
It was bizarre because all of a sudden you don't, and not say that you don't see color, because you always do, I guess is what you're supposed to say. But like, I just was like, oh, that's the, I didn't get hung up the way I thought I'd be hung up.
Yeah, you know, there, everything on TV is a buy-in. It's all fake. You're not really watching what you think you're watching.
Yeah.
So you do something that's a little illogical, but there's funny behind it. Like it's on the way to something funny. The audience is so good. Audiences are really sophisticated. So they look at it and they go, what? All right. It's just a blip. And then they accept it. You know, it's impossible. The kids were white and she, you know, they would have had some pigment. They didn't. But so who gives a shit?
So you were saying, I don't know how much you want to share about this, because you said it to me and I thought that was really fascinating. Mm-hmm. You're doing Madison Square Garden in the round.
Yeah. So I'm doing it on January 28th and I'm going to live stream it on my website. And it's my first time back there. I've done some big rooms. I've been touring a lot the last few years. Yeah. I've done two specials.
One a Grammy.
One won a Grammy. The second one got nominated.
How good did that Grammy feel?
It was nice. You know, when I used to win awards, I just found it awkward. I didn't really care about it, but this one was very nice.
I bet.
I wasn't there. I was just, you know, my assistant sent me.
2020?
21.
Yeah. So it was pandemic stuff?
No, nothing much about it. A few bits.
No. Huh? I meant you couldn't be there because of the pandemic.
No, I just didn't want to go. I just didn't want to go to the Grammys.
Yeah.
Just award shows are drag, you know.
I love them.
Do you?
I've never been to one, I would think it would be cool.
It's fun to look at when your first year, like when I first was on getting nominations,
Emmys,
it was fun to go to the Emmys and look at the famous.
Well, you have six Emmys?
Yeah, six. Fuck. And three Grammys, I guess. So I'm live streaming the show on my website. So it's going to be on January 28th. And I hadn't been back to the Garden, but I want to do it one more time. I'm not going to do it again after this, I don't think. I think this is my last time doing something that big because I want it to be special. Because it's, you know, I just want to go back one more time. And it's in the round, so the audience is all around us, me. And it's going to be live streaming on my website, so you can watch it live on my website.
The cameras that will be shooting this in the round will be going straight to your website.
Straight to the website. And you can watch it live. Or you can watch it for like another 10 days. I'll leave it up for like 10 days and then I'm taking it down. It's just like a live event thing. I'll have a special of the same material that I'm actually shooting this weekend at the Dolby in LA where they do the Oscars.
Yeah.
I'm doing two shows there tomorrow and the next night. And those I'm shooting as a proper special, like, you know, with two shows and cameras flying around. And that'll be more like the album. You know what I mean?
What are you doing?
But the 28th, it's $25 and you can watch it. And I have Keith Robinson's opening for me. It'll all be in the show.
Really?
And then I also have, this is kind of cool. Ravi Coltrane, who is John Coltrane's son, great sax player, great, has this trio. And I saw them in a club in New York. And I was like, this guy's amazing. And I had this weird idea. What if he opened for me at the Garden? What if I had these guys playing for me before me in the Garden? And I did, but I thought, I'm not going to say anything. But so I walked up to him after the show to say, hey, I enjoyed the music. And he said, I'm going to see you at Madison Square Garden. He had tickets. So I said, you want to play? And he said, yeah. So he's playing. So there'll be a little bit of jazz, like about 10 minutes of jazz.
Right before you go on, right before Keith?
Right before me.
Really?
Because I want the audience to be listening to him. I'm more excited about that than my own show. Is this guy playing this jazz, this weird, freaky jazz for fucking, it's about 18,000, 19,000 people.
Yeah. As a comic, my brain immediately wants to ask you the micro questions because it's all the stuff we'll be doing in the future. Like you were the first person to kind of eliminate audience shots.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember going, there's no audience shots in this.
Yeah. There's no point.
Yeah.
There's no point. Cosby did it too. Cosby himself is like one of the best stand-up films ever. And he just sits in a chair. You never see the audience.
He's going on tour.
Yes, I heard. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And prior, my favorite of all time is prior, what do you call it? Live in Concert.
Yeah.
And that one, I don't think there's much in the audience. There's some like big shots of the whole, and I do that, you know?
Yeah, a big wide.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I don't like specific audience. But well, I only did it like because I watched yours, and I was like, "Oh, there's no audience shots." Yeah. You were also the first person to go back to clubs and do a special at clubs.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if I was that.
You were.
Ryan Regan has one of his best specials is at the Improv.
Irvine Improv. That's a great fucking special.
Yeah, that's like his. I mean, he's one of the best ever.
He is.
Ryan Regan made me laugh harder than most people. Like him, Norm, and Zach. I think are the ones that like made my fucking gut move the hardest.
Zach, Leanne's not a big laugher. Uh-huh. She just doesn't like. A lot of times she'll go, "I don't get it," and which makes me incensed. I go, "Try,
yeah,
like listen to it again."
Right.
Like she likes to dismiss things.
Mm-hmm.
Like I don't know if it's. I think there's a power in that sometimes.
Well, laughing at comedy is it's surrendering.
Yeah,
yeah.
And so I think she likes, and she did not. Zach got up and played the piano. Daniel Tosh opened, went before Zach. And she...
Where? And what?
Is it when we were kids.
Okay.
And Daniel Tosh went up before. And,
he's funny too. I like Daniel.
God. It bums me out that I don't... That he's not... He's living his life. He's got tons of money. He doesn't need to go tour the way he used to.
It's too bad. He was really great.
But he's so talented.
Great stand-up.
He's so talented.
Mm-hmm.
So talented. And he opened his set by mocking me. By going, "Oh, my name's Bert." Huh. And Leanne goes, "He's doing your act." I go, "No, he's not doing my act." I was like, in the back, I was like, "Just shut up and fucking listen. Just he's nice. He's my friend." And then she was like, "I don't like him." And then Zach went up. She's like, "Is he just going to play the piano? Mm-hmm. What the fuck?" Mm-hmm. And then he had one joke that he said. It was the last joke he said. He goes, "Well, you know, it's time to do laundry when you get out of the shower and dry off the shoe." And Leanne goes, "Now he's funny." I went, "I wish you had that energy at the beginning when he started speaking."
Yeah.
And then you could have enjoyed all of it.
Yeah.
But like, yeah,
club specials. Yeah.
Club
yeah.
specials.
Yeah.
You did yours at the Improv, right?
I did.
Or no, the store.
Comedy store. I did one there. Yeah.
So what are you artistically as a director doing with this special different than your last special?
Well, round specials in the round are great because the audience is all around you. They're like the camera's looking at you and the audience is all behind you.
People shoot it in the round and just don't turn.
Oh no, that's insane. No, you have, it's like,
that's what I thought.
It's like a Mazda rotary engine. Like you have all these cameras set up and they don't see each other. It's a perfect way to shoot a special because you just, the cameras can't see each other.
Yeah.
And that there's no effort in that because you just have them off axis from each other. And wherever you look, there's a camera. You're never not fully frontal.
Yeah.
Everywhere you look, there's one there. And behind you is audience. So it's not like where you're shooting the guy on stage, then the audience. The guy, and you try to do side shots where the guy's here and the audience is here.
Yeah.
And those never work.
Yeah.
So, and the comedian always looks a little isolated on stage. So it's a little, there's something about specials, they never quite look good. But round specials are kind of perfect.
They look beautiful.
I did mine at the Celebrity Theater in Phoenix.
That's where Tom just shot his.
That's where, and also Nate did one
there. Nate Bargatze did his there.
And the first guy to do it was Carlin. Carlin's best special to me. And I forget what it's called, but it's in that theater on that stage, and they haven't changed that place at all.
At all.
No. That's
the hardest I've ever seen Shane Gillis kill.
Mm-hmm.
And like, and Shane's
Shane's great. Yeah.
He's there's no way to, the only thing I can quantify, I like to see him blow up the way he's blowing up, but I like to see him get more confident with his material and take bigger chance. I like that.
Yes.
The best thing about Shane was when I first met him and he was just like an open micer, and you saw the funny thing that he didn't know was funny yet.
Right.
And you go, "Oh, this guy's funny."
Yeah, he's a little a victim of his own act a little bit. Like, he isn't altogether comfortable up there, but I think that's good.
I agree.
I think he needs to stay that way.
He got a standing ovation opening for me at the Celebrity Theater. He got a standing ovation.
Great.
Oh. Yeah, if you're Shane, if you're me and you got to go up next, you're like, "Oh, am I going to put on two shirts?
That's all good for you.
Am I going to take off two shirts? Jesus, fuck." He didn't know he was getting
That's good for you.
He goes, "Man, you know," Shane, hand behind his back, "All right, thanks." And they stood up and he went, "No." And then he looked around and he started walking off. We're like, go, you're getting a standing fucking ovation.
Yeah.
He destroyed me and him are doing, we're doing the Mullet Arena.
Mullet Arena?
In Tempe.
Oh, that's great.
We're doing, you know, it's funny. I'll say, you know, look, obviously.
Is it a sports arena? Who play? Is it a, how big is it?
It's 5,000.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Nice.
Yeah.
It's great size.
Hockey. Yeah. Yeah. And so we're doing February. I mean, I have to be honest and say it's a testament to Shane and Mark Normand.
Yeah.
As I put them on the bill, you know, a year ago and said, yeah. You know, hey, let's go to the Super Bowl. It's right. The weekend of the Super Bowl. I said, we'll do a show Friday night. Mm-hmm. And then I definitely sell tickets, but these guys are blowing up sitting now at a clip that yeah. We're doing, I think, five nights.
That's great. That's great.
And I'm at the point where I'm like, I got to write my new hour really fucking quick.
Yeah.
If I'm going to follow these guys.
Yes.
Because they're fucking.
Well, that's good. That's why it's good to have strong openers. It's like sparring partners. It makes you better.
Yeah.
And it makes your audience happy.
The audience is going to be
comedians
very happy.
Have a disillusion. We have this idea that if a guy kills, you can't follow him, but it's better for you.
Oh, well.
Because the crowd's.
Hold on.
You get insecure, but the audience doesn't.
I'll tell you a story about a guy I know. Who I ran into him in Minneapolis and he said, I say, hey man, you want to do 10 minutes? And he said, are you sure? And I thought he was saying it because he had been canceled. And I was like, no man, I think my fans love you. It was you. I was like, Louie. And as you walked out, I was like, isn't that weird that Louie would, I go, my fucking fans love Louie. Like, of course. And they go,
is what I meant.
No, but then they said,
like, are you sure you want me on stage?
Then they said, well, you could also go, you do have to follow Louis CK.
Yeah,
I tell the truth.
Yeah.
You murdered for 10 minutes.
Had a good set. Your audience was amazing.
It was the greatest treat in the world. Is they're out to see a comedy show and they're like, holy fucking shit, Louis CK's here. They went bananas, and I remember going, did he take his shirt off? Like, why is this really loud? Is he taking shirts off through his whole thing? How come it's getting so good? And then I got out and I was like, oh, fucking struggled for the first 5 minutes. No,
you did great. I watched your whole set.
And then I told you, I said, you told me one of my jokes that I did in my special.
It was something about a sign.
A deaf kid sign.
Yeah, what was the joke? It's very funny. It's about your daughter saying something about the deaf kid sign.
It's, right? It was in my special, so I'll
yeah.
Yeah, I'll let them see it.
Okay.
But
it's very funny. I laughed at a lot of stuff in that set. It was really good.
But yeah, it is, I personally, we do a Fully Loaded tour every year where we did it with Attell last year. We bring like 10 comics, do tour buses.
Right.
Open invite. By the way, I'll tell you what, I'll put out an offer. When we start doing offers, I'll put out an offer. I have two, hang on. Don't say no. I have two.
Yeah.
I have two that I think you'd really like to do that would be really fun. And I think we'd all have a blast.
I can't do it though, because the show at the Garden is going to be my last show. I mean, I am stopping after that.
No.
Yeah, because.
Wait, what do you mean?
Well, because first of all, it's going to be live. It's going to be live on my website.
You're stopping stand up after it?
Well, for at least a year. I'm taking a year off, I think.
What?
But also, because I'm not going to have any jokes. I'm going to have burnt all the jokes that are going to be seen on the special on the 28th.
Yeah, but
I can't tour after that. I have to shut down.
All you got to do is 15 minutes.
I don't have 15 minutes of jokes.
Shane.
No, I need a break.
We'll party our balls off.
Look, but that's like going back in time. Like, that's what it felt like when I went to Minneapolis.
Yeah.
Because I had been in this crazy thing of touring.
I remember you telling me a lot of like really kind of sage things.
I used to do arenas and stuff, all that
stuff. You told me that. Yeah. You go, you're doing arenas. I said, yeah. And you go, it's for you.
Yeah, exactly. The audience is not, it's fun. Like, wow, look, I'm in an arena. But the audience is like, I can't even see him. You're walking to see a comedian. You shouldn't have to walk up a big cement ramp and like sit in a fucking bleacher seat holding a cup with a basketball player on it, like dunking, like, and you're watching him really on like a TV above your head. Yeah. And he's this big and there's people talking. That's a shitty show.
Tampa, I'm going to be at the Amalie Arena February 17th.
Yeah. I think a comedian who gets an opportunity to do arenas, you should do it once. It is for you. It's also a way to make a shit ton of money. You make so much that you can fly in private jets and it's actually economical suddenly, like cheaper to fly in a jet.
Yeah.
Because you can do more shows. You can do like five arenas in five nights. It's insane. You have no, there's no friction. There's no, it's just life gets crazy.
Yeah.
You should do it once.
I'm doing, this is my arena tour.
But then the next tour you should do theaters. Cause if you're a fan, you watch the guy every time he comes to town, you know, if you're in Minneapolis, you see him come to the Acme every year and then you go, he's at the Pantages now. That's cool. He's at, and then the State Theater. And then he plays the fucking Timberwolves Stadium.
I'm playing there.
And you go there as a fan, you go, huh? Okay, good for you, Bert. I'm happy for you. But the next year, if he's at the Timberwolves, you don't see him again there. You'll see him at the Pantages every time he comes,
yeah.
Your favorite comedian.
But you're
not going to go see him at the fucking arena every year.
Tom did his arena tour, was coming everywhere. Mm-hmm. And then I'm doing Tops Off as my arena tour starting in February. And then I think I would love to say I'm done for a year, but I don't have that brain. I can't.
Yeah, I need the time off. I need the time. And I also want to put a lot of pressure on that show. That show's a very special thing to me, this show on the 28th.
I'm going to watch it. I'll be in London.
Yeah.
I'm going to live stream it.
It's going to be cool, I think.
We'll live stream
it. I'm going to put everything I got back in it, just into that show and it being in the garden one more time and knowing I'm never going to do something this big again.
What are you wearing?
I'll never do a show with that many people.
What are you wearing? Suit?
No, never. Just something like this, yeah.
I remember you did one special and you had a stain on your shirt.
Yeah, I always look like shit on stage. There's no way around it.
I did a special. I did Hey Big Boy, and I got to we went into the edit.
Yeah.
And I was like, the second show is the best. And they're like, yeah, you have a big mustard stain on your pants. I was like, huh? And Leanne's like, remember, you needed hot dogs. And I was like, no one would have just noticed that there was mustard on my fucking pants.
Well, when I did the special for Netflix, I wore a suit. It's the only time I ever did that. And my collar popped out of the suit, and it was doing this for the entire second show, and it was the best show. And we paid a guy to delete it. You can catch it in some shots that the collar's a little funny looking.
Really?
But a nerd just went through the entire show and erased the sticking out collar. It's very expensive.
What time's your show tonight?
No show tonight.
Or tomorrow.
Tomorrow I'm at the Dolby. I don't know, it's like 7:30 or 8. I don't fucking know.
Two shows?
One Saturday, one Sunday.
Ugh.
And then I go all over. I'm doing the Chicago Theater. I'm doing the, you know, Austin City Limits, whatever, the movie.
You're on tour until January 28th.
Yeah, then I'm doing a shitload of shows. I'm going back to the Constitution Hall in D.C.
It's great. That's Eddie Murphy's shot.
Love that place. Yes. Delirious. I shot a special there too, yeah.
You did too?
That's where I did the Netflix one. Yeah, it was in that theater.
It's a great fucking theater.
Yeah, it's like a little arena.
It is.
It's really intimate. And then I'm doing
Constitutional.
The Lyric. Yeah. Then I'm doing the Lyric in Baltimore. But I'm doing like a shit ton of shows.
Lyric's great.
St. Louis. I'm doing New Orleans, Mobile. And then it all ends that night at the Garden.
God.
Yeah.
Well, there's a number of things I'm proud of achieving in this business. But number one is being your friend. It's really cool to know you.
Same here, Bert.
It really is.
I had such a good time in Minneapolis because I came there. I was doing a theater next door. I was doing a much smaller theater. And with Joe Mackey and
Morgan Murphy.
And we're doing our theater, and I was happy to be there. It took me a while to get back to the place. I'm doing theaters again. But my shows feel good and humble, you know? And it was fun to come to your, and you've got this fucking bus and like big barrels with charcoal in them. You're making barbecues. One of your comics is making barbecue meat.
Dave
all
Williamson,
night.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was such a scene, and you just seemed happy, and everybody's happy to be on this big tour with you, you know? And so it was really fun. And to get to go on stage, it was really great.
Wow,
and
murdered.
Feel that kind of crowd again. Because I'm having great shows. But that thing, that feeling of like, he's a guy. We love that guy.
Yeah.
That you get your first big tours.
Yeah.
That you don't get that back. You're not going to have that your whole life.
Yeah.
You're not going to need it your whole life. I don't need that anymore. I actually like working without it.
Yeah.
But it was really fun to feel. Like, it was a real gift you gave me. To just hop on your horse for a minute and go like, this is fun. Well, that's cool. I'm really happy for you that you're getting to have that.
Well, I just know that we've all been watching the path your horse takes through the jungle and following it our entire career. So
yeah, be careful, man. Don't do that. Don't follow that horse right over the fucking cliff, baby.
There's quicksand out there.
There's a lot of quicksand, believe me. And it's not so sexy.
Thank you, Louis.
Sure, man. Thank you.
Bert and Tom and Bert, one guy. goes topless while the other wears a shirt. Tom tells stories and Bert's the machine. There's not a chance in hell that they'll keep it clean. Here's what we call Two Bears, One Cave. No scripts, a bit of booze, amateur partology. Dirty jokes, raunchy humor, no apologies. Here's what we call Two Bears, One Cave.